professional, and educated classes who don't fit the untouchable mode are systematically deported or imprisoned. Shipler quotes one Palestinian's description of the situation: "We have over 1,200 leaders of the community who have been deported. These were leaders who were not involved in any kind of activities that even subjectively you can call terrorist. These are church leaders, university presidents, union leaders. They threw them out. You have 1,200 laws that have been implemented, arbitrarily controlling every aspect of life in a very racist and apartheid way. You need a permit to plant tomatoes and to plant eggplants and to plant vines. You have to get a permit if you want to plant a plum tree in front of your house. If you lose your ID card, you are in vital trouble. If you do not follow all this trickery and paperwork, you are out, and the border is sealed." Shipler points out that little is done by Israeli police to protect the Palestinians. For most of the 6 years that Menachem Begin was prime minister, Jews could kill Arabs on the West Bank with impunity. Arrests were sometimes made, prosecutions sometimes begun. But somehow the cases rarely came to trial. The pattern of leniency was documented by an assistant attorney general, Judith Karp, who studied 70 instances of Jewish violence against Arabs during a year beginning in the spring of 1981. She found that even in cases of murder, the army, which administered the West Bank under Defense Minister Ariel Sharon, intervened to thwart police instigations, or, at the very least, failed to press for vigorous police action. Settlers came to see themselves as living amid lawlessness. In murder cases, the report said, the appropriate energy and required efficiency for investigations of this kind were not evident. Describing two incidents in which settlers killed Arab boys, Karp wrote, the suspects received a summons to present themselves to the police station. They announced that they would not appear, and that they would speak only with the military authorities. The police did not do anything to bring the suspects to the police station despite the grave suspicion. Where soldiers had shot Arabs, she said, the soldiers' version was believed, even though it did not seem reasonable, and the circumstances of the incident supported the complainant's version. Karp's findings produced no action by the Justice Ministry, the police, or the army, and she therefore resigned as head of a committee examining the problem. The report was suppressed for a year by the Justice Ministry. It was released only after Yitzhak Shammi became prime minister and a round of Jewish terrorism broke out. Many Palestinians believed the Jewish settlers were laying the psychological groundwork for the Arabs to panic and flee should warfare erupt, just as the massacre of Arabs at Deir Yassin led many to flee during the 1948 war for fear that the Jews would massacre them as well. Indeed, the germ of this idea could even be found occasionally in the utterances of Jewish settlers. In 1918, Akuda quoted a resident of the settlement of Ofra, Aharon Halamish, as telling a symposium on Arab-Jewish relations, "We have to make an effort so that the Arab people have a hard time in this country. If we employ them and develop them, we are undermining ourselves. We don't need to throw grenades in the Kasbah or to kick out the Arabs, but there is nothing wrong with our giving them a hard time and hoping they get killed." Emphasis supplied, it is not difficult to understand the killings and brutalities committed by Israeli soldiers in the occupation forces. Shipler quotes a Hebrew University faculty member. A Hebrew University faculty member, Shlomo Ariel, writes to Haaretz about disturbing attitudes in discussions with young Jews who are about to enter the army. "I met with about 10 groups of 50 young people each, which represents to a certain extent a random and representative sample of the Jewish population of Israel of this age level, with all its strata and ethnic origins. The young participants almost unanimously expressed full identification with the racist positions of Finkelstein toward Arabs. To the claim that the latter are Israeli citizens with equal rights according to the law, the typical reaction was that Israeli citizenship should be denied them. In each discussion group there were a few who proposed physically liquidating the Arabs, right down to the elderly, women, and children. They received the comparison between Sabra and Shatila, the Beirut refugee camps, and the Nazi destruction favorably, and said with full candor that they would carry out such destruction with their own hands with no inhibitions or pangs of conscience. Not one expressed shock or reservations about these declarations, but there were those who said that there was no need for physical liquidation, it would be enough to exile them across the border. Many supported apartheid on the model of South Africa. The idea that to the Arabs of Israel this country is their country and birthland was received with amazement and mockery. Any moral claim was rejected with scorn. In each group there were not more than two or three holders of humanitarian, anti-racist views on this question, but it could be seen that they were afraid to express themselves publicly, and indeed those few who dared to express their unpopular opinions were immediately silenced by a chorus of shouts, emphases applied, if this is, as said, a representative sample of Israeli youth. The future of Israel is grim indeed. Human rights organizations, and the US State Department, have condemned Israel's oppressive occupation tactics and brutalities as inexcusable. Today, in civilized Israel, the only capital offense is rock throwing. Shipley recounts an incident which makes especially chilling reading, because the Israeli commander was a woman. Troops and policemen have, on occasion, been prosecuted for brutality, but only half-heartedly after much public uproar, and their sentences have usually been light. Strict guidelines on opening fire during demonstrations have been promulgated, but little or no training has been given in crowd control, leaving every inexperienced soldier at the mercy of his fears with only a deadly rifle as his protection from angry stone throwers. A grinding guilt works at the bowels of Israeli consciousness. Or, worse, a callous frustration numbs the young Jew and carries over into his own open democracy. He has grown up thinking the Arabs are good for beating. The infectious brutality festered, and then broke into an open sore in the Tel Aviv civilian guard, which patrols streets and watches for suspicious characters who might be planting bombs. Jewish high school students from Herzliya, north of Tel Aviv, were shocked at what they witnessed when they volunteered for night duty in 1984. Under the supervision of Ser Arahamim, the chief of their base, bands of volunteers from Tel Aviv schools drove through the city, spotted Arabs, pushed them into stairwells, slapped and punched them. "We were driving in the area of the central bus station," one girl told Haaretz. "Suddenly we saw three Arabs in front of us. One of the volunteers asked them what they were doing here, and where they worked. He instructed them to enter a stairwell in a nearby house and to wait there. I told Sarah that I had heard that they were beating them, and I wanted to know what was going on. Sarah said to me, 'Go look. When my daughter sees it, she gets a good laugh.' I got out of the patrol car and went to the building door. The three Arabs were facing the wall with their arms raised. One of the volunteers asked one of the Arabs, 'Where do you live?' The Arab answers, and he yells at him, 'Why are you lying?' and hits him. Another question and another shout, 'You're lying.' And a blow. During another patrol, she said, 'We saw an Arab running. We didn't know if he was running because of us or because of the rain. We all got out of the patrol car and stopped him. Everyone was armed, even though we had not passed the firing range test, and it's forbidden.' I came to the door of the apartment house. The student leader was holding the Arab's identity card. In front of him stood the Arab with his hands up, and behind him stood a volunteer with drawn rifle with the cartridge in. I heard the student leader say to the Arab, 'If we see you again, that will be the end of you.' And he slapped him. They make a real thing out of the beatings. They talk about this experience to everyone. One guy broke an Arab's tooth, the second forced another Arab to crawl. Another boasted that he broke two of an Arab's teeth. Another student, a boy, told the paper, 'The guys on the base prepared me by saying that you have to beat Arabs, because Arabs rape girls and are a criminal nuisance. When you beat them, they go away. When we drove in an area without Arabs, what's called a clean area, the volunteers explained to us that it was clean because they were beaten and they fled. The volunteers mocked Arabs for their accents and tried to make them cry. The commander, Ser Arahamin, was forced to resign, but no criminal action was taken. The conscience of the country is always there, yet wrongs are done as a matter of routine. A system of military courts hears security and political cases in the occupied territories, and many of the judges are attorneys and law professors, not career military men, who preside during their month of reserve duty each year. But the ostensible judicial protections are easy.